So it is Wednesday, and we will learn a little bit of Sfas Emes. Remember, these shiurim are being dedicated in memory of David Schwartz, Hashem Yikom Damav, who was particularly excited and attracted to Sfas Emes, Chassidus in general. Okay, so let's talk today a little bit about the resurgence and the revival of Torah. Chazal Darshan La Yehudim Haisa Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Kar Ora Zetara. Chazal Darshan Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim Aleim V'Al Zaram. There was this mass Kabbalah, in part Kabbalah Zatara, in part Kabbalah of the Bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Medrash says that all the trees lined up in Shushan, vying to be the one upon which Haman would be hung. And some trees said, look at my fruit, I should be the tree. And some trees, I should provide the timber, obviously not the tree. I should provide the wood. And some said, look how beautiful my leaves are. And some said, look how nice my trunk is. And Hashem chose a very, very small and humble bush to use the wood to hang Haman. What medrash does that sound like? Har Sinai medrash. There's a lot of Har Sinai references. The bush contest, or the tree contest. And then, of course, when did the real turnaround happen? We think the turnaround happened in Pesach, because that's when the Purim Yom Tov happened, right? The turnaround. Yud Gimel was the Gzera, Yud Dalet, Tesvav, Tezayin, Haman was hung on Tezayin. But they waited a few months until they wrote the letters authorizing the Yidden, authorizing the Jews, to defend themselves. What month were the letters written? Anyone know? Chaf Gimel Sivan. So the real turnaround, the Tosef Esther, happened in Sivan. So what is really happening? Let's try to dig down to the details, under the hood, how this revival of Torah happened. Let's see what the Sfas Emes says. So, I'll give you the more complicated one first. He combines a Gemara and a Tosfos, and he spins a very important idea in Chassidus. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the mountain at Har Sinai, hoisted it above Am Yisrael, and threatened us that if we don't accept the Torah, you'll be buried alive. Okay. So, the Gemara says, oh, that shows that we really don't have to keep the Torah because it was forced, Bal Karcho. So, Rava says, no. Even though it was forced upon them, during Purim, they accepted it again. So a simple Gemara just makes it sound like, for some reason, Hashem forced the Torah upon us at Har Sinai. I don't know, whatever reason. And then Purim, we repaired the Kafalem Har Kagigas because we accepted it voluntarily. What does that mean? Why did Hashem hoist the mountain to begin with? How does Purim repair it? Is it just because we accepted it voluntarily, or is there something deeper? So that's the first question. To solve the question, he cites a Tosas. So you see, he's weaving a Tosas into the Gemara. Tosas asks Akasha. He's not going to discuss Tosas' answer, but his Akasha is, forget the Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas part. Go back a stage earlier. Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas is stage B. Stage C is Purim, when they undid Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas. But at stage A, they said Nasa V'Nishma. So why was there the need for Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas at stage B? Forget Purim. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, famous Tosas and Shabbos, Pechas? Why did the Rabbanu Shalom have to lift a mountain if they were willing? Nasa v'nishma. So evidently, there's something much more complex. So in order to understand that complexity, let's remind ourselves of A, B, and C. Make believe they happened at different times, just to make it easier. At Monday, Am Yisrael said, Nasa v'nishma. Tuesday at Har Sinai, whatever, the next time, stage B, Hashem hoisted the mountain. Stage C at Purim, we undid Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas. How would you undo Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas? By returning back to stage A. C revives A. A is Nasa V'Nishma. B is Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas, which is a problem because it's involuntary. C is let's go back to Nasa V'Nishma. So Purim is reverting back to Nasa V'Nishma. So now at least I have a roadmap for why Purim was important. What's happened? We said Nasa V'Nishma. That's great. That's Mesiras Nefesh. We're going to serve you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll do mitzvahs before we even find out. But Hashem knows, and this is based on another medrash, which I'm not going to elaborate, that for all of our commitment at Nasa V'Nishma, we know what's going to happen to Am Yisrael in the future. Whether it's the Egel, whether it's in the future, Jewish people will leave observance and won't be that great at Nasa. It's all great to have Nasa V'Nishma. Sounds like a beautiful plan, but that plan's going to be wrecked throughout history. Hashem knows the frailty of human nature. Hashem knows that human beings won't be able always to fulfill Nasa. So he says, you know what? I will take a mountain, hoist it upon you, and create a modality to be my people even without Nasa. It's called the modality of Nishma, where you heard my voice, you were committed to me, you were frightened to death, you're locked into me as a Jew, whether you keep mitzvahs or not, a very deep Hasidic idea. So Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas was Hashem's plan B. ideally, you're right, Nasa v'nishma. But I know that Nasa, it's based on a medrash, is going to fade. So I want to lock in Shmiah, that you heard my voice, that you're my people, that you're linked to me, that you're bonded to me. You know, I'm going to create the non-Nase bonding, Kafale Markigias. So Kafale Markigias is Hashem's plan B. Ideally, mitzvos, mesiras nefesh. Plan B is, even without Nase, you heard my voice, you're attached to me, you're attached to me at the hip, and to accentuate that connection, you're so frightened, yet you chose life over death. That's how deeply connected you are to me, because the mountain was hovering above you. Now Purim time comes, and Purim is, let's see if we can recycle Nasa v'nishma. Let's see if we can turn back the clock and go back to plan A. Not plan B, but plan A. Let's go back to Nasa v'nishma. Now, how does Purim allow us to go back to Nasa v'nishma? It's not like they fulfilled so many mitzvos. Here's the point. Nasa demonstrates mesiras nefesh, that you're willing to be so committed to Hashem that you're following Hashem blindly without understanding all the Torah mitzvos. Purim was a time of mesiras nefesh. I'm elaborating a little bit. Purim is mesiras nefesh on three levels. First of all, Mordechai endangers his life. Mordechai knows that he stands a chance to be killed if he doesn't bow down to Haman. Most importantly, Esther sacrifices her life. Kasher shecholti, shecholti. Kasher avadati, avadati. She knows that she may not make it out alive, not just for the encounter with Ahasuerus. Mefarshim say that her original plan was to throw herself on the sword. In that first party, she was going to make believe she and Haman were conspiring to kill Ahasuerus, rat out Haman. Ahasuerus would then hang Esther and Haman together, but at least she'll whack Haman, even though she's willing to die. Kasher avadati, avadati. And then she starts to see things move. She says, you know what, let me try some other idea, especially once she sees that Mordechai has been celebrated through the town of Shushan and Haman has been degraded. Maybe I can get away just with killing Haman. She's willing to die. Anyone know who else is willing to die for the greater good of Am Yisrael's history? Esther says, Kasher avadati, avadati. I gave it away before. Who says a similar language? Yaakov. What does Yaakov say? Kasher shecholti, shecholti. One of the parallels between the story of Yosef and Yaakov and the story of Esther. Yaakov basically says, okay, for the future of Am Yisrael, I have to give up Binyamin. And as far as Yaakov's concerned, I don't know if I'll ever see Binyamin. I'll be a shchol. I'm going to suffer the loss of a child. But I know the Shimon is there and the Shvatim are there and there's something larger calling me. So Esther's Moser Nefesh, Mordechai's Moser Nefesh, and of course Am Yisrael's Moser Nefesh by fasting 3 straight days without eating and drinking. So if anyone has a hard time tomorrow, you're getting off easy. You're fasting about 10 hours tomorrow. They fasted 3 straight days on Pesach. They weren't Mekayim Matzah that year because they were fasting on Pesach. So the Mesiras Nefesh of Purim restored the earlier state of Nasa v'Nishma. Nasa v'Nishma is a state of Mesiras Nefesh will fulfill mitzvahs. Hashem knows, you know what, that's not going to last as long as I'd like it to. So I'm lifting the mountain. Plan B. You're mine because I forced you. You heard my voice. A beyond mitzvah connection. Beyond Nasa v'Nishma connection. Purim time comes and says, you know what, let's see if we can demonstrate Mesiras Nefesh and undo all of the Chatoim, including the Chetei Egel, that ruined Nasa v'Nishma and return to Nasa v'Nishma. So even though Purim is not a day that they opened up the Shulchan Aruch and fulfilled all the mitzvahs, it's not what we're reading in Purim, it's a Mesiras Nefesh that restores Nasa v'Nishma, because Nasa v'Nishma is built on Mesiras Nefesh. That's one reason that Torah was restored. That's one way that it was restored. They realized that through Mesiras Nefesh they could reach back and reclaim the original Nasa v'Nishma plan. Another issue is that they saw Amalek being destroyed. Haman was traced back to Amalek. He's Haman ben Amdasa, Ha'agagi. Agag was the general who Shaul spared. Whether Haman was genealogically part of Agag or not, some midrashim say that he traced himself all the way back to Esav and Eliphaz, but he's only part of the Amalek. According to the Mefarshim, all the enemies of the Jewish people, because not everyone was lining up to murder the Jewish people. There were some people who were Misyahadim, Kinafal Pachad, Mordechai Lehem, but the enemies who were killed were all Amalek. That's why they couldn't take any of the money, because Macho Emcha Zecha Amalek, the Megillah Sessa says 3 times, Uva Biza, Lo Shalchu Es Yadam, Uva Biza, Lo Shalchu Es Yadam, even though Achashverosh awarded them Ushlalam Lavos, they could take all of the money of the people they defeated. That's why the 10 children of Haman were hung on a tree, because they're Amalek, in order to demonstrate Mechias Amalek. The Sassema says, remember, everything in history is cyclical. That's not Chassidus, that's history. Everything in history is cyclical. Every time Amalek dips, and every time Amalek is defeated, it's an ongoing war, because we don't fully defeat Amalek to Yimas and Mashiach. Every time we partially defeat Amalek, Torah arises. Because Amalek halts Hashem's presence in this world. When Amalek's defeated, Hashem's presence in this world expands and augments. When Hashem's presence in this world augments, Torah flows. Torah is manifested. Torah is a manifestation of creating more space for Hashem in this world. When did it happen first? B'shalach and Yisra. What happens in the end of B'shalach? The war with Amalek. What happens right after that war is partially victorious for the Jewish people? B'chodesh Shlishi, Bo Har Sinai. When did it happen again? Purim time. When Amalek was defeated, not completely convincingly defeated, but one step towards its full defeat, they sensed that with the defeat of Amalek, Hashem's presence was strengthened in this world, and they wanted to express it through Torah. When did it happen a third time? Okay, this is not the Sfas Emes, he didn't live through this. 1945, Nazi Germany was defeated, the Axis powers were defeated, Amalek's force, whatever Amalek means, without digging down to what Amalek means, Amalek was defeated. What has happened over the last 80 years? A phenomenal, phenomenal spread of Torah, unlike any spread of Torah in the last 2,000 years. I'd say probably even 2,600 years. So you'd have to go back to the Bais Rishon to find a period in history which has been so much Torah being studied. Why? Because once we defeat Amalek, part of it, I believe, is returning to Israel, but once you defeat Amalek, there's more space for Hashem in this world. Once there's more space for Hashem in this world, then Torah is manifest. So those are the two poles, the two pillars of the revival of Torah during the Nes of Purim. One is a sense of Mesiras Nefesh. Oh, through this Mesiras Nefesh, let's reclaim Har Sinai. Let's reclaim Nasa V'Nishma, so that a Kabbalah Satara to try to undo Plan B and return to Plan A, where there are most of Nefesh through Nasa V'Nishma. Number two is, Amalek has been destroyed. Let's use this, let's exploit the opportunity to expand the presence of Torah and be Mekabel Torah. And of course, that's what happened. Right after Purim, they return to Eretz Yisrael a few years later. And then the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, after Nevuah subsides, the great, great Tanaim, the great Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the whole period of Torah Sheba'al Peh begins to flower. And not just in Eretz Yisrael, where it begins to flower, but as I told you yesterday, what happens in Shushan in the year 486 BCE is in part preparing the stage for what happens in what we call Bavel, but it's really Persia. When Chazal talk about Bavel, there's no Babylonians in the 2nd century CE. They're all Persians. They're being ruled by Persians. They called it Bavel because that was a Jewish name. Like, Jews have names for their own cities. It's like you go in Poland today, we have our own names for the cities, and there's a Polish name for the city. It's very different. Jews have their own name. They continue to call it Bavel. It wasn't Bavel. If you ask someone how to get to Narda, how to get to Pupadisa, how to get to Sur, you wouldn't say Bavel. You'd say, send me to Narda, which is in Persia. That's who ruled those areas. So you're creating a pocket that will sustain Jewish life 600-700 years later and will lead to the flowering of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So in Shushan, Torah Sheba'al Peh, the first seeds of Torah Sheba'al Peh are being born in Shushan because of Mesiras Nefesh and because the Jews are positioning themselves, because the story of Purim and Esther is happening on a global scale. Okay, I think I had two or three other pieces, but I think we are past our time. Let me just check. Yes, we are. Okay, have a good day, everyone. Mitzvah Shem today at 12:45. We'll talk a little bit about, I don't know, we'll see. More Purim.